Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. This is BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Thursday, July 26th. I am your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box presented by our friends over at the new and better than ever DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up over there using the promo code BANG200, you get 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. And that redesign over there is absolutely fantastic. Much more user-friendly. Everything works a hell of a lot quicker. They're doing great things over there at DSI. And of course, with football season coming up, you want to make sure that you have all your ducks in a row to be able to shop around for those half points, those full points, the different futures odds that are out there. Season win total numbers are, of course, still posted. So make sure that if you need another sports book, you take a look over at DSI and see what they have to offer. Still doing our Monday-Thursday format here. We'll do that for next week, and then we'll reevaluate that first full week of August. Probably planning to do the show every day that week. May do a Bettors Box on Monday and then regular football and basketball and baseball and whatever else shows the rest of the week. Not exactly sure how I want to do that yet, but I will certainly keep you posted as I get a better idea with that. Monday mailbag coming up here after the weekend. Didn't have one last week this past Monday because we did the Monday show with Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Talked some college football with him. So bring back the Monday mailbag. I know a couple of people have sent me some questions here that I haven't quite gotten to. I just got back from Vegas about 2 a.m. on Wednesday morning. So still trying to get back into the swing of things there with that. But you can reach out to me on Twitter at Skating Tripods or email me, adam@bangthebook.com, with your Monday mailbag questions or if you just have a question about something else. And also, if you email me, adam@bangthebook.com, you can get the notes for every show. I know I talk about a lot of numbers and a lot of things that may kind of be a little bit hard to follow in the 45, 50, 60 minutes that I do the program, so you can get those notes emailed to you every time there's an edition of the Bettors Box. My picks and tips article, which I was still doing out in Vegas at ungodly times, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m. Vegas time, just making sure that I had that finished for you with some quality analysis there. That's still available everyday.com. So when I tell you that I don't take a vacation, I'm not bullshitting you. I don't take a vacation. I do at least some kind of work every single day for the website, get something out for the readers and the listeners. And, it's just how I'm hardwired now at this point with the amount of volume I've done here in what'll be almost my 5 years for bangthebook.com. I think I started about July 2013. I know we started doing show recordings August of 2013. So coming up on that anniversary there. And thank you to those of you that have been with us from the start, those of you that have kind of come on maybe 2-3 years ago, and those that are recent finds of the content that we have here. I know it's just baseball right now, but once we get into football season, I promise that you will certainly be very, very impressed with everything that we've got going on. Speaking of content over at the website, all 132 college football teams have been previewed, or all 130 college football teams have been previewed, all 32 NFL teams. We've got a great guest piece from Ed Fang of the Power Rank about his wisdom of crowds model for the NFL. We've got MLB, WNBA, NFL team preseason previews. We'll be coming up from Alan Moody. We're going to start getting our NBA team previews up. Admir's going to do a fantastic job with those. We're still covering UFC and arena football and esports and everything. It's just we truly are over at bangthebook.com, your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. I tell you all the time about footballcontest.com, our proxy service for the Super Contest, also for the Golden Nugget Ultimate Football Challenge. We are in those contests. We got signed up while I was out there, in fact. So got to meet up with both Maddie and Tony from footballcontest.com. Fantastic people. They'll take good care of you as they've taken good care of us. So we've got two entries in the traditional Super Contest, one in the Super Contest Gold, and then one in the Golden Nugget Showdown. So I will have my Bang the Book podcast entry once again for the traditional. My boss will have his own entry in the traditional, and then him and I are going to collaborate on the Super Contest Gold entry. Now, when it comes to the Nugget, we'll collaborate the college football and the NFL there and that. So we're very excited to get those things underway here very, very shortly. And speaking of contests, you can get involved at bangthebook.com with our daily streaker, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won, cash prizes available for those. You sign up with an email address. We send you our fantastic daily newsletter That'll get you a chance to win some cash prizes there in those contests. And of course, if you play the monthly contests, would be a good time to look into getting an entry into those, because we start a new month here coming up next Wednesday. All right. Ooh, a lot of stuff there. I guess one other thing I can mention here, because I couldn't mention it on Monday's show. Actually, I did mention it on Monday's football show. I posted those screencast videos over to our YouTube page. So go to YouTube, search Bang the Book. I posted those two videos about using FanGraphs to handicap baseball, and then how to use Baseball Savant and the StatCast data that's there. I talk a lot about that in my picks and tips piece. Talk about it a little bit here on the shows as well. So I posted those screencast videos to YouTube. They're 15 minutes apiece. Maybe I'll do another one with some more queries for StatCast. Maybe I can do that. If you want to send me some queries for StatCast that you're interested in, I can maybe put together a screencast video for those, kind of get that out there for the people. But those are up on our YouTube page. So go to YouTube, search Bang the Book. You could find them there. All right. Let's start here by handicapping the trade deadline a little bit, and then we'll go beyond the box score. We'll take a very, very quick look down the lines. I've got our exit velocity update here today. Also, we'll update how those heavy favorites have been doing, and then talk about a pick I like for tonight, and then preview some series for the weekend. So lots of stuff here coming up on today's show. Obviously, a week's worth of baseball that I had to try and consume, and of course, being out of town and not being out of the loop necessarily, still making sure to follow things, and of course, writing the daily article every day, but just, you know, it's kind of different. You know, you see news well after the fact. You don't really get to have a knee-jerk reaction or a snap judgment on something. You know, you just kind of look at it well after the fact. And, of course, you're trying to relax a little bit, trying to have a little bit of fun. So, you know, I've been doing a lot of catch-up here over the last 2 days and really trying to dig into everything that's been going on. And, you know, it's one of those things where this is a very challenging weekend. And, you know, I know I say that a lot of times when it comes to baseball about limiting your exposure, and you've got heading into the All-Star break and you've got the trade deadline here. You know, I don't tell you this stuff just to try and cover my own ass. I tell you this stuff because these are important things to keep in mind. This is a very uncertain time for a lot of teams and a lot of players. If you're a good team and you know that your GM is going to be buying, it's business as usual. If you're a bad team, or a team on the fringes of the playoff race, it's a much different type of situation. Now, if you are a bad team, you've come to the realization that, you know, impending free agents are going to be traded. Maybe some of the controlled players will be traded as well, as teams are looking to restock their farm systems or whatever else. So the extremes, you know, they kind of get it. You know, we're going to buy or we're going to sell. But still, even knowing that, it's still a hard time. Your teammates are getting traded. Families are getting uprooted. And if you're a team that's kind of there on the fringes, and there's one team in particular that a lot of people are looking at here this weekend, and that's the Washington Nationals. They play the Miami Marlins, and they're falling behind here in this American League East race. They're not playing good baseball. They haven't hit that stretch of playing good baseball. And we see the Nationals here 7 games back in the division as we're recording on Thursday. And then they're also 5.5 back in the wild card. They need to start making up some ground. And this is a team that, you know, when you think about trade currency, they don't have a ton of it. They could re-spin a Kelvin Herrera. They could maybe look to move a Ryan Madsen or somebody like that. They could always trade impending free agent Bryce Harper. But, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, if you trade Bryce Harper, do you kind of take yourself out of the running, maybe take yourself out of the inside track to signing him? So, probably not a thing that Washington will look to do. Somebody like a Jeremy Hellickson could go, maybe a Gio Gonzalez, something like that. There are some guys that could go for the Nationals if they do look to reshuffle the deck. But, you know, there's some extra added pressure for a team like that. That they want to buy. They want to be in the race. They play Atlanta and Philadelphia a lot the rest of the way. They have the opportunity to control their own destiny to an extent. But these are still uncertain times for a lot of teams, a lot of people. And this is one of the things that's kind of hard for me, and I've talked about this a lot, you know, sort of the gray areas, the things that aren't really quantifiable. At the end of the day, for me, this is a numbers game. This is an industry to me based on numbers, based on results, based on statistics, and then I apply those statistics, I apply those results, I apply the standings and things like that to my handicapping. This weekend is a different kind of thing because you're talking about the people of Major League Baseball. yes, you're still looking at statistics, and yes, you're still looking at playoff races and things of that sort, but you're talking about the people. These are emotional times. Players, teams, executives. You have some players here, like a Manny Machado, for example, who's already been traded. He knows one organization. You know, that's what he knows. And then he gets traded. Yes, it's exciting to go to a contender. Yes, it's exciting to go from a Baltimore team that's going to lose 110 games to a Dodgers team that's probably going to end up winning the NL West. That's exciting. It's great. It's fantastic. But you have other players that, you know, are maybe active in the community. Excuse me. And they're active in the community. They've got, you know, philanthropic efforts. They've got foundations. They're established. You know, they're established in that area from doing a lot of different things. And that has a cascading effect to it. Not just is it hard on the player and his family and his children, it's hard on his teammates because his teammates have, you know, those are usually high character individuals, easy guys to get along with. It's hard on the other players' wives. It's hard on the organization. It's hard on the front office. These are things that can really have an impact on a team, and not only on a team, but also on an individual. So the morale boosts or the lack thereof with some of these deals. You know, the Dodgers players were very excited to get Manny Machado. Very excited. If Corey Seager wasn't out for the year, they wouldn't have gotten Manny Machado. But they're very excited to get him. Maybe there's an immediate impact to something like that, even though Machado is off to a little bit of a slow start here for the Dodgers in his first six games. With the Indians, for example, acquiring Brad Hand, the pitchers have to be excited because they've had a lot of games blown by the bullpen. But also, this does nothing for them in the short term. Is he an Andrew Miller replacement? Yes. But this is a move based on October. That's all it is. So it doesn't really tangibly do anything for the team in the short term. So you want to consider when looking at these trades that will happen today, will happen tomorrow, and throughout the weekend, consider the long-term and short-term impacts. Some moves are going to be long-term types of things. Some moves will be short-term types of things. Everything is designed, for the contenders anyway, to improve the team, but it doesn't always happen that way. Also consider park factor changes. You've got pitchers going from a good park to a bad park, hitters going from a good park to a bad park. Manny Machado, again, going from Camden Yards, which is a very good hitter's ballpark, especially in the summertime, to Chavez Ravine, which really isn't. Arizona, not a great hitter's park anymore with the humidor. Colorado obviously is. San Diego and San Francisco, not so much. So for Manny Machado, who goes from Rogers Center where the ball carries fairly well, Yankee Stadium where the ball obviously carries well, Fenway Park, a good hitter's park, Camden Yards, a good hitter's park, Tropicana, not so much. But he goes from those five predominant, you know, venues to the National League West, where it's a much lower hitting environment. So does Manny Machado help the Dodgers? Yes, absolutely. He lengthens the lineup, takes a lot of walks. He's a good defensive player at third. We'll see how he holds up at short. But this is a guy that, you know, does help this team. But the impact with which he will help this team is still up for some debate because of those park factor changes. Sometimes league changes can be a thing too. You know, pitchers go from just pitching to having to run the bases and take a few swings. You know, some guys don't like to do that. So there are some different considerations with that. And then finally, another group here, again, of intangible type of stuff. And again, that's the hard part. Tangibly, a lot of these guys are upgrades or downgrades if they're traded from a team. But the unquantifiable elements are the things that can really define the short term and the medium term after the trade deadline. Media markets. If you go from playing in New York to playing in Oakland, that's a huge difference. If you go from playing in St. Louis to playing in Milwaukee, it's a big difference. Obviously, you know, there aren't going to be a lot of interdivision trades between those two teams, but you get the point I'm trying to make here. You know, if you go from Los Angeles to Cleveland, much different scenario, different media market, different expectations. You know, there's a different kind of spotlight. And then of course, too, you know, just from an expectations and from a market type of standpoint, if you're the HMFIC in a team, the head mother effer in charge, and then all of a sudden you go to a team that has a lot of pieces that can help you out, that's a different type of thing too. You can relax a little bit more. You're not solely responsible for that team's production, whether it's from a pitching standpoint or from a hitting standpoint. You've got a supporting cast. Maybe that helps a guy relax a little bit more. Maybe that lack of pressure can kind of be a helpful type of thing. Think about somebody like a Giancarlo Stanton, for example, going from Miami to New York, where in Miami, he was everything. In New York, he has a supporting cast. Just a different type of approach that a player can take. You know, expectations. You're going from a bad team to a good team. Or maybe you're a young player that was on a good team. Now you go to a bad team. Now all of a sudden you have a chance to be in the spotlight. Maybe that's something that helps some players out. Or maybe having those extra expectations doesn't help a player out. And then finally, you know, teams will have different philosophies and suggestions for pitchers. You know, there might be a pitcher who's at, you know, 60% fastball usage, 15% slider, 15% curveball, 5% changeup, something like that. Or 10% changeup, I should say. So maybe you get to another team and the team goes, hey, you know what? We're looking at your changeup metrics and they're not real good. We want you to throw more curveballs. We want you to throw more sliders. We want you to throw fewer fastballs. Anybody that gets acquired by the Yankees right now is going to be told to throw fewer fastballs. Some pitchers, it may take some time for that to settle in. They may not be fully comfortable with it. So the immediate impacts of pitchers, both starting pitchers and relievers, is something that you really want to take a lot of time to try and figure out. If you're a guy throwing 65% fastballs and you go to a team that throws a lot of breaking balls like a Houston, like a New York, like a Cleveland, something like that, Jay Happ is the perfect example. Jay Happ throws a ton of fastballs. If he goes to the Yankees and the Yankees are telling Jay Happ, hey, we want you to throw more changeups and curveballs and sliders, does that still work for him? Is that something that he's comfortable with? How long does it take that to settle in? There's been some talk, and Fangraphs has done some very good articles about this, about Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray, you know, relaxing his fastball usage with the Yankees because it's philosophically what they want their pitchers in the organization to do, and it's been a detriment to him. It has not helped him at all. So that's an important thing to consider as well with these pitchers. They're not all guaranteed to go and have success because they've got a better defensive team or a better lineup or something like that. They will be asked to do some things that may be out of their comfort zones a little bit. Ulys Chacín for the Brewers. Free agent signing. Terrible April. Awful April. The Brewers were telling him to do some different things. Since then, he's been pretty good. It's just one of those things where there's an adjustment period in play here, and these guys have to adjust at the highest level. And if you go to a contender, you have to do it in a pennant race or in a wild card race, and it's not easy to do. So just keep that in mind here as you handicap the trade deadline, of course, the transactions that take place here over the weekend. And in a few minutes' time, I'll talk about the ones that have already happened and some of the impacts that those may have. All right, let's go beyond the box score here. And what I do want to tell you is that I've used the first couple series here, and I'll probably do this with the weekend as well, to just take a second half temperature teams. Who's there? Who's not? Who wants to play? Who doesn't? You know, things like that. You look at a team like the Indians, for example, you would think that having a little bit of a marginal first half would have kind of kicked them in the ass a little bit going into the second half, but kind of been the opposite. You know, they haven't really played great baseball, not a whole lot of focus, some very bad defense. They're up by so much in the Central Division, and then the Twins come out, get swept by the Royals to start the second half. You know, it's a different kind of atmosphere than somebody like the A's, who went into the break on a tear, came out of the break on a tear too, because they know, you know, we're still making up ground. We've still got to track down Seattle. Let's go ahead and put some distance in this thing if we can. So teams still have different types of mindsets. Some teams will flip the script after, or flip the switch after the trade deadline. Other teams won't. You know, just trying to take the temperature of some of these teams here. And a good place to start with that is to look at this series between the Cincinnati Reds and the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, the Cardinals did lose 2 out of 3 in this series, but you can see changes happening with St. Louis right now. Daniel Ponce de Leon makes the start on Monday night. You've got Austin Gomber making the start on Tuesday night. He had 15 relief appearances this year, but that was his first major league start. They both dominated, but the Cardinals did blow that first one for Ponce de Leon. Dakota Hudson's going to be recalled, probably to start in place of John Gant. He's a polished college arm out of Mississippi State. Excellent command. Outstanding command. But when you look at what's going on here, the Cardinals are building a little bit for 2019 and beyond. They want these starting pitchers to get some experience. They want these guys to get some innings at the big league level. And also, you kind of assume that the culture in that clubhouse is a little bit different without Mike Matheny. I think Mike Matheny was probably resistant to younger players. And we see this with some of the older managers or some of the more old school hardline types of guys, we see them a little bit resistant to change to youth. You know, it kind of adds a little bit to their job description a little bit, having to, you know, take care of some of these younger players. So the Cardinals get rid of Mike Matheny, and now all of a sudden they're getting younger. They're getting some of these younger pitchers onto the team. You've got a guy in Yadi Molina who should be able to work with them. But it's a good injection of life into the ball club. However, keep in mind that these are young kids getting their first taste to the big leagues. So struggles could certainly follow. Cardinals offense didn't do a whole lot in this series for them. Pitchers were very good. But again, every team's situation is so unique here at this time of the year. Then you look at the Cincinnati Reds. You know, they just keep going. 2 out of 3, you know, you get that emotional win to start the series on Monday against the Cardinals team who was coming off of a game against the Cubs. And spoiler alert, we'll talk about that again later in the show. But the Reds got 3 good starts in this series from Luis Castillo, Homer Bailey, and Sal Romano. A little bit of a 6-man rotation for them right now, trying to limit workload for some of their young pitchers. And that was something that I talked about with that All-Star break show regarding their young pitchers in terms of, you know, their workloads and reaching new thresholds and all that type of thing. How about Eugenio Suarez here? 305 average, 390 on base, 576 slugging. Not a bad return for Alfredo Simon a couple years ago, huh? But what really stood out to me in this series is the 3 starts that they got. You know, those 3 starts were very, very good. Homer Bailey, 18 swings and misses in his Tuesday start, easily a season high for him. 16 for Sal Romano. This offense has been getting better. The rotation is quietly improving. The Reds are in decent shape here long term. If they can inject some really high upside guys into their farm system, then that's something that could really change the dynamic for them. They've got bullpen arms they can move here this weekend. Scooter Jeanette is getting a lot of attention on the trade market, so we'll see if they opt to move him. But for now, the Reds still look like a buy team, which is, you know, something that I really didn't expect coming out of the All-Star break. I figured they would kind of cool off a little bit. Tampa Bay Rays took 2 out of 3 from the New York Yankees. And the big thing that stood out to me here in this series is another tough start for Luis Severino. Now, it was an 11-day layoff. He did pitch in the All-Star game, but he got rocked by the Indians in that last start of the first half, rocked here by the Rays. 6 home runs allowed over his last 3 starts. 3 starts ago, he faced Toronto. In a small sample size, you're not too worried about it. However, 35 fly ball outs against 17 ground ball outs in Severino's last 3 starts. That's not his game. That's not what he's supposed to do. He should be a high ground ball, high strikeout guy. That's the way that you stay out of trouble. In these 3 starts, his ERA has gone from 198 to 263. So yes, there were some signs of regression. Yes, there's some variance involved. But you kind of wonder, is there something more here? And the distribution of batted balls is the reason why I'm kind of looking at that. Severino needs to be a guy that's in that 48-50% ground ball range, because that's what he really did to help curtail the little bit of a home run problem that he had last season. Now all of a sudden he's giving up some home runs, giving up some fly balls. To be fair, you know, the Indians hit a lot of fly balls. The Rays, you know, they've been hitting for some power here lately, but still, I will be watching Luis Severino very, very closely, and you should be too, because this is a guy that lays really big numbers. And if there's something going on here, maybe we've got a start or two to try and make something out of this. So again, I think when you look at Severino and you look at that batted ball distribution, there are some potential red flags there. And of course, as luck would have it for the Yankees, then they get a Masahiro Tanaka complete game shutout the next night. So big help there for them. The Rays, though, you know, with 2 out of 3, a gritty kind of series for them, 20 different pitchers used in the 3 games in this series, not 20 different individual pitchers, but 20 different appearances. They trade Nate Eovaldi. Chris Archer looked pretty good in his most recent start. So, the Rays are still just such an interesting team with this opener concept and with on offense that a lot of times struggles to get by, but they did a pretty good job in that series there against the Yankees. The Phillies were a blown save away from sweeping the Los Angeles Dodgers, and Ross Stripling hit a little bit of regression here, gave up 3 home runs in this series. The Phillies hit 9, and the Phillies have found the long ball here. Rhys Hoskins has gotten healthy now, coming back from the broken jaw. You've got Nick Williams adding a little bit of power. You've got Carlos Santana adding a little bit of power. You've got Scott Kingery, who's got good power. Mikel Franco's actually having a pretty decent season. The offense is really firing on all cylinders here for the Phillies, and that's good to see for them, because it can help them a little bit if their starting rotation, which is very young, does run into some regression here moving forward. Big story about this series is the very heavy bullpen usage. 20 and a third innings of relief for the Phillies, 14 for the Dodgers. Could be a little bit of a problem for the Dodgers taking on Atlanta. But the Phillies, you know, their bullpen's been worked a lot here this season because they mix and match so much. And you know, they are deeper now with guys like Pat Neshek back, and I'm sure they'll acquire a couple of bullpen pieces here this weekend. But watch out for that with the Phillies, because as their young rotation tires, their bullpen's going to take on even more of a workload, and that could be a little bit of a problem for them. Tigers and Royals played each other in a Who Wants It Less series here, and you know, the Royals at least seem to be trying. Again, as I mentioned at the top of the show here, they swept the Minnesota Twins to open up the second half. Things going well for them, but then they blow a save in the opener, wind up losing this series as Danny Duffy gets blasted in the finale. The Tigers, they hit lefties well. They've done that all year, did it here in this series also. But you know, when you've got two teams like this, and we're going to have some of these series of teams that just aren't going anywhere in the second half of the year, try to look at it from an individual level. Guys like Birch Smith and Matt Boyd and Heath Fillmyer all pitched really well in this series. They're pitching for jobs. They're pitching for roles on their respective teams next season. Jordan Zimmermann, not so much. He's already paid. Danny Duffy, already paid, and he's having a tough year anyway. So because he's having a hard time finding answers, you know, that kind of builds up a little bit. Francisco Liriano, a guy that'll always find work. So some guys just have a higher level of focus than others. And that can be a betting angle here in these series between two bad teams. So that is something I want you to keep an eye out for the rest of the year. The Royals will likely trade Mike Moustakas this weekend. You know, Alex Gordon's a shell of what he used to be. Alcides Escobar is just not a very good baseball player. Salvador Perez still hitting in the middle of this order with a .263 on base percentage. Royals had that little run against the Twins. I think that says more about the Twins than it says about the Royals. The Royals will probably fall apart again. They don't have a great minor league system. Really don't have a whole lot to get excited about the rest of the way. It's going to be a long 2 months for them through the rest of the Major League Baseball season. One other series to hit on here real quickly, Cubs and Diamondbacks. Arizona's figured out this road pitching thing. They gave up 4 runs at Wrigley Field to the Chicago Cubs. The Cubs are a fantastic lineup, as we know, but great efforts from Patrick Corbin, Clay Buchholz, and Robbie Ray. Arizona is a team you really need to reevaluate when it comes to pitching on the road. I know what their metrics say, especially with some of the small sample sizes, but they've figured it out. They have made the adjustments. They've told their pitchers what to do going from the humidor to regular outdoor conditions. You got to give them a lot of credit for that. And this has been a thing that's been building over the last 3-4 weeks. You see it come to fruition here in this start, or in this series, excuse me, against the Cubs, only allowing 4 runs. Now, they couldn't sweep the series because they lost a game 2-1, but still, you know, that's one of those things where the Diamondbacks are certainly a team to watch now on the road. They used to be a fade team or a stay-away team. They may be a buy team now with some of the starters in that rotation. John Lester, still a regression candidate, pitched well on Wednesday, but still a guy that we will be looking to fade. All right, let's recap some of these trades that have already happened here. We'll start with the one that happened as I was recording last Thursday's show. The Indians acquiring Brad Hand and Adam Simber from the Padres in exchange for Francisco Mejia. Huge deal for the Indians. That goes without saying. Brad Hand speaks for himself. Adam Simber is dominant against righties. He's got a 28-1 strikeout to walk ratio against them, .213 wOBA against. The Indians needed this. And furthermore, Simber's a guy they're going to have for the next 5 years with his contract situation. Hand they'll have for the next 3. So that's huge for them. A couple of replacements for next year when they lose Andrew Miller and Cody Allen. Simber's a great guy to face the right-handed heavy Yankees or Astros. Again, this is why I talked about getting one in on their futures price. They've got 2 really spectacular bullpen weapons now to use alongside Andrew Miller, who's coming along, Cody Allen, who should get it figured out. Neil Ramirez still throws hard. And I think the Indians still get another bullpen piece or two here before the trade deadline. But, you know, in terms of immediate impact, maybe not so much, because this is still a team playing the long game, playing for the postseason. But overall, you know, that's just a great thing for their futures price if you've got it. The Oakland A's acquired Jurys Familia from the New York Mets. A good trade for Familia here to get a fresh start, get out of New York. He goes into a setup capacity now behind Blake Treinen and Lou Trevino. Also a little bit of an insurance policy for Trevino, who's doing this for the first time at the big league level. This is a good acquisition for Oakland. their bullpen is very dangerous. If they can get to that one-game wildcard playoff game, I don't know who starts it for them, but they've got the bullpen pieces to cobble that thing together and then, you know, give somebody some hell in that first round, I think. They're still well behind the Yankees, Astros, and the Red Sox as well. But still, you know, that's a team that, if they make the playoffs, could make a little bit of noise. Orioles and Yankees. The Yankees get Zach Britton from Baltimore. And for Britton, the overall numbers aren't great. The strikeout-to-walk ratio, not great either. But he did allow 4 runs on 5 hits in the third of an inning on June 22nd. So in his other 15 and a third innings, only 2 runs allowed on 6 hits. You know, power sinker, guy with reverse platoon splits, which is kind of interesting. But, you know, just another piece to add to that incredible New York Yankees bullpen. And I think what the Yankees can look to do here if they want to, I think we could very well see the Yankees take Tampa Bay's opener concept in the playoffs and start with somebody like a Chad Green or somebody like a Zach Britton if you've got a left-handed heavy top of the order or even a right-handed heavy top of the order with those reverse platoon splits. They can do that because they have the bullpen depth. You can send out Severino. You can send out Tanaka if you want, or Sabathia or something like that. Maybe Happ if they acquire him. But they can do it in the second and third inning with some of those backup guys. Severino will start the game, obviously. But, you know, that's one of those things where now they give themselves options and bullpen depth to go ahead and go out there and, you know, use that opener concept to their advantage. I think it makes a lot of sense for them. And, you know, we'll see. They'll probably test out Zach Britton in some high leverage roles. You know, this is a guy who had a crisis of confidence with Baltimore, he's had a lot of uncertainty for a while between injuries and trade talks. That's a guy where, you know, you would expect him to probably thrive a little bit in this situation. The Orioles also made another trade, sending Manny Machado out to the Dodgers. Again, downgrade in park factor, but he fits right in from a walk standpoint, power standpoint. Dodgers are in great shape once again to make a nice run out there in the National League. Seung-Hwan Oh going from Toronto to Colorado, a guy I wanted the Indians to be in on. But this is a great move for the Rockies. And these are moves that people don't really think too much about. They're not factored into the betting odds. But from a live betting standpoint for Colorado or from a standpoint of playing their full games, expecting them to have a bullpen advantage, this makes a lot of sense. Oh has allowed a 198 weighted on base average to righties with a 45-3 strikeout to walk ratio. I love these matchup centric moves. I think they're really smart. The smart organizations do it. The organizations that are still lagging behind the times still think that relievers have to go full innings. Oh is a great pickup for the Rockies here. I think it's a very strong move and one where, you know, I think that it will have an impact on my handicapping with them, with starts for John Gray and Herman Marquez and Tyler Anderson and Kyle Freeland. You know, Freeland, Anderson, some of those guys are kind of five and fly types of dudes. Adding bullpen depth, critically important. And O was a great addition for the Rockies here. Diamondbacks picked up Matt Andrees. They needed some starting pitching depth and some bullpen depth. Andrees provides both. High ground ball percentage, low walk rate. I also presume that Diamondbacks looked at his numbers and said, this is a guy that fits in the humidor for us. So a good addition there for them to add some depth. Then finally, the Red Sox get Nate Eovaldi. They needed starting pitching depth as well. Also a guy you can use as a multi-inning reliever in the playoffs who throws upwards of 100. Contenders are making smart buys here. And the trade market, while I think the teams that are making moves haven't been screwed over by any means, it looks like it's a relatively reasonable market for contenders right now. You know, so we'll see if that does continue here throughout the weekend. And we'll examine the next round of trades on Monday. All right, exit velocity update time. And we'll do this real quickly here since we do it every week. Batting average on batted balls of 95 plus miles per hour up to 521, high point of the season. 2 weeks ago, we were at 520. So gradually rising here as we hit the summer months. Top team, the Dodgers at 557, Diamondbacks 554, Yankees 549, Rays 546, Rockies 545. The Rockies offense has been really good over the last month plus as they're rising in both of these categories, 95 plus batting average and 95 plus WOBA. The worst, the Royals at 483, Jays 494, Mets 495, Giants 500, Phillies 501. Only 3 teams under 500 now. So some of those bottom feeders are rising a little bit here in the summer months. Highest pitch percentage with a batted ball of 95 plus miles per hour exit velocity. Want to throw this out there because sample size can be pretty important. Red Sox and Toronto still 1-2 at 7.4. 7.2% respectively. Indians at 6.9, Seattle 6.6, Oakland 6.6, or Seattle 6.7, Oakland 6.6. So those are your top five teams making the highest amount of high velocity contact. The bottom five making the lowest amount of high velocity contact: the Rangers, Phillies, Twins, Padres, and Rays. So the Rays making the most of their opportunities. The rest of those teams, kind of sitting in the middle or down towards the bottom a little bit in batting average on high velocity contact. WOBA up to 645 this week, 2-point increase from 2 weeks ago. Dodgers and Yankees still 1-2. Dodgers at 720, Yankees 714. Diamondbacks at 686, Rockies 685, Rangers 675. So the Rangers don't make a lot of high velocity contact, but when they do, they have great success with it. So there could be a betting angle in there. When they face a pitcher that allows a lot of high velocity contact, bet the Rangers. You can go sort that hard hit percentage over at Baseball Savant. And again, I showed you that in that screencast video. When the Rangers face a guy with bad command, somebody who allows a lot of high velocity contact, particularly high velocity contact in the air, play the Rangers or play their team total. Again, we're playing on likelihoods and probabilities here. It's not an exact science necessarily, but we can make a lot of educated guesses. So when you've got the Rangers facing a Jaime Barria type who gives up a lot of high velocity contact on line drives and fly balls, makes some sense to probably play them. That's why I do this. You kind of have to read between the lines sometimes, but there's always a method to this madness. There's always a reason why I'm sharing this information with you, because we're looking to find those betting angles that other people aren't going to find. You're not going to hear about exit velocity metrics on any other show in this business. It's just not going to happen. People don't do it that way, but I do. And those are the edges that we're trying to find here, not just in July, not just in August, but all year long on the Bettors Box. Worst teams in WOBA on high velocity contact: the Royals 572, Giants 605, Marlins 609, Mets 619, Cubs 620. So the Cubs, probably a team that would have some positive offensive regression coming. Also, you notice only one team below 600. So we've kind of been following this throughout the year because the outliers, those teams at the edges, do tend to regress to the mean. Let's talk about big favorites, because I've been chattering on Twitter a little bit. We've got a new social media person over at Bang the Books, so doing a lot more with our Twitter and Facebook platforms. So make sure you get involved, interact with us, have a little bit of fun. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at Skating Tripods. But the talk was about laying the big prices with the favorites. And we touched on this, I think it was maybe 2 months ago or so, looking at how profitable this angle has been over the last several seasons, over the last 5 years. And because of the current state of Major League Baseball, we're seeing a lot more of these games with these really significant favorites, because, there are a lot of bad teams. There are a lot of good teams. There are a lot of bad teams as well. And what happens is when you get those good teams, you've got the bad teams, and you're going to have a lot of big favorites that are out there, and people don't like to lay chalk. It's just not something that they like to do. But as we've talked about here, it's been a very profitable thing over the last several years. So you want to make sure that you're out there looking for these opportunities, because there can be value on a big favorite. And we're seeing it here this season. As you can go to killersports.com. I've got this link in my notes piece. So if you subscribe to the notes, you're going to get it. Or you can find it on Twitter in my tweets and replies section, because I sent this directly to somebody. But on the season, favorites of a minus 180 or higher are 261 and 100, 72.3% average line of minus 222. Is it big? Yes. But if you're somebody who's out there betting X to win $100, and we'll just do that for the simple math here, you're up over $4,300 blind betting favorites of minus 180 or higher. It takes a lot of bankroll to do this. It's something where I think mentally it's harder to do than it is, to physically do it. But this is one of those situations where we're seeing a lot of blowouts again this year. In those games, the average favorite runs scored is 5.59. The average underdog runs scored 3.49. So we're seeing some blowouts here. In fact, the run line, 55.6%. You're up about $1,450 if you've bet that to win 100 every time that you've played it. But favorites are a good investment in Major League Baseball. And this is very important, because the rest of the way, we're going to see a lot of heavy chalk. It's going to be hard to find opportunities to play a lot of teams that are minus 120, minus 130, unless those are games against, you know, teams that are comparable, teams that are in a toss-up situation. You're going to see a lot of good teams playing a lot of bad teams the rest of the way. And laying big chalk has been very profitable over the last five seasons. Profitable. This is the second best season we've had over the last five seasons in that department. Last year was the best. If you did this, you were up 68 units. If you were doing $100 units, you're up 68 units betting heavy favorites across the board in every game, betting X to win $100. So this is a very profitable betting angle for you. People want to be allergic to chalk. They don't want to lay the big numbers, but it's justified. It's there in the data, and you can see that if you subscribe to the notes. I've got the link, or if you go to my Twitter page, at Skating Tripods, search my tweets and replies, you'll find it there at the top. So don't be allergic to chalk. There is still value in the big favorites, and we see that here. We see that in the data that's out there. We're talking about some significant gains here playing big favorites. So just keep that in mind throughout the rest of the season. Real quick here with the Down the Line segment, because we didn't have a show on Monday, so obviously I could go all the way back to last Thursday and look at all the different games and talk about the line moves, but we'll just do a very simple and quick recap here. Maybe we've got some new listeners that are drawn to the show because we've had a couple of football programs lately. When you're looking for line moves, starting pitchers with a high left on base percentage and a low left on base percentage are going to create them. If you've got somebody in the 80s, probably going to see money come in against them. If you've got somebody in the mid-60s, you're going to see money come in on them. It's just the way that it is. ERA and xFIP discrepancy both ways as well. High ERA, low xFIP. Low ERA, high xFIP. FIP also included in that equation. Again, you're going to see line moves with that. Moves when the lineups are released as well. Once we know who's playing, you're going to see, you know, the people that model baseball, that put together, you know, they input all the data, put the players in, spit out a score. You know, if you're missing Manny Machado or Jose Ramirez or something like that, that changes your projection of the game, the line's going to come down. Platoon splits. Team's good against lefties, facing a lefty, market's probably going to back them. Good against righties, facing a righty, market's probably going to back them. Seen a lot of pitching changes here lately, which kind of skews the market as well. A lot of day of disabled list stints this season, it feels like. But we're going to keep seeing this. Teams that are spot starting guys, six-man rotations, all those types of things. It's going to be very frequent, very prevalent here as we go forward, particularly because the playoff picture is so cut and dry. You basically have six teams fighting for five spots in the American League, and you've basically got, you know, I mean, the NL is a little bit different. You've got some division races there, but you have some teams that, you know, aren't going to make the playoffs, and they're fully aware of that already. So we'll see the six-man rotations, protecting their pitchers, limiting their innings, stuff like that. You'll see a lot of that as we go forward. You know, you mostly know what to look for by now, but never a bad thing to sort of recap everything that's going on here. My pick for tonight, I like the Phillies a little bit here tonight for the first five innings. I talked about their series against the Dodgers, a lot of heavy bullpen usage, but I kind of like Ranger Suarez in this one. I apologize if it's not pronounced Ranger, but I'm going to call him Ranger because it sounds kind of badass. He's in his major league debut tonight, 22 years old, very, very good minor league stats, very strong minor league stats, great command at the minor league level, ground ball guy as well. If he's got those two things working for him, you can survive at Great American Ballpark. The Reds do hit lefties very well, but I like this matchup for the Phillies offense against Tyler Mahle. Mahle has a below average walk rate and a below average home run rate. Gives up walks, gives up home runs, plays right into what the Phillies do well. So we'll take Philadelphia tonight for the first five innings. And I do have a couple of additional plays over in my picks and tips piece at bangthebook.com. So make sure you go and check that out. Not a card I totally love tonight. And, of course, again, this weekend going to be a little bit challenging with the trade deadline and all the things that could be happening. You know, pitchers getting scratched, relievers not being available, position players getting scratched, so on and so forth. Tough week. A lot of moving parts. But the weekend here. Let's talk Brewers and Giants. You got Wade Miley, Derek Rodriguez tonight, Chase Anderson, Madison Bumgarner tomorrow, Ulys Chacin's Johnny Cueto on Saturday, Junior Guerra and Andrew Suarez on Sunday. The Brewers stuck getting two lefties here in this series, and lefties have really given them fits. I think we see money come in on Madison Bumgarner Friday, and I also think we see money come in Sunday on Andrew Suarez. We'll see some fades of Chase Anderson, of Junior Guerra, maybe one of Ulys Chacin, but with Johnny Cueto kind of being in the state that he's in, I don't know if that's really going to be a thing, but you know, for the Brewers here, it's tough. You know, you got to bank wins when you can. For the Giants, about a 500 team, just trying to tread water a little bit. You know, again, I haven't been high on the Giants at any point really throughout the course of this season. But, you know, this could be a decent matchup for them. I'm not sure. But like I said, the big takeaway here, we'll see Giants money on Friday and we'll see Giants money on Sunday, at least based on what we've seen in the betting market throughout the course of this year. Phillies and Reds, we just got done talking about this one. Ranger Suarez and Tyler Mahle tonight. Nick Pivetta, Anthony DeSclafani on Friday. Vince Velasquez, Matt Harvey Saturday. Zach Eflin, Luis Castillo on Sunday. The market's still been skeptical of the Phillies. The Reds are taking a lot of steam. This is a series where I think we could see some runs scored, though. You've got Nick Pivetta and Vince Velasquez that kind of have up and down command. You've got a sell guy in Eflin. You've got DeSclafani, who hasn't stayed out in the middle of the plate. You've got Harvey, who's probably a regression candidate. You've got Castillo, who gives up some dingers. Wouldn't be surprised to see Reds money hit the board here this weekend. I wouldn't be surprised to see some runs scored this weekend as well. I think if you bet all four overs, you probably go 3-1 here, at least based on the way that I'm breaking down this series. Of course, you want to see what the numbers are and things like that. But, you know, with the Phillies hitting a lot of home runs here lately, with Harvey and DeSclafani and Castillo not having pristine walk rates, the Phillies could get some base runners here and could have a lot of fun. Also, the Reds could do the same against the Phillies starters. So I do think we get some offense in that series down there at Great American Ballpark. Dodgers and Braves, another four-gamer here. Rich Hill, Anibal Sanchez tonight. Clayton Kershaw, Mike Fultonevich tomorrow. Alex Wood, Sean Newcomb on Saturday. Ross Stripling, Julio Teheran on Sunday. We'll see money hit the board on Sunday on the Dodgers. But the Braves seem pretty re-energized and reinvigorated here. I think this will be a good series, a little bit of a playoff preview. Wood and Newcomb are two bye guys for me coming up here on Saturday. So that'll be a game where I'm probably going to be invested in the under, but should be a really good series between those two teams. Cubs and Cardinals meet again. They just met for five Thursday through Sunday. Now they'll meet again for three here this weekend. We'll see Mike Montgomery, Luke Weaver, Jose Quintana, Miles Mikolas, Kyle Hendricks, and John Gant currently listed for Sunday, but I think Dakota Hudson will probably be the guy that gets that start, or the Cardinals will push this thing around, maybe use Mikolas on Sunday, get Hudson out there on Saturday. But Hudson did throw an inning and then got pulled with the call-up from AAA Memphis, so he probably will wind up waiting until Sunday to go in that one. We'll see what the play-up by ear with how the Cubs do this, but or with how the Cardinals do this, excuse me. But again, they're moving their rotation around. They're adding some pieces. I like this. I like the proactivity and the aggressiveness from the Cardinals. Cardinals 3-12 in their last 15 games immediately following a Cubs series. So here we go again. We played this angle on Monday. We got a little bit lucky with it, but it still came through. Sunday Night Baseball this weekend features the Cubs and Cardinals. Cardinals stay home, but they take on the Rockies, who are playing very well, and Tyler Anderson, who's pitching very well. Cubs don't play on Monday, but I will have a ticket on Colorado on Monday. I will trust this system. And once again, I actually do like the matchup here for the Rockies with Tyler Anderson taking on Carlos Martinez. So we'll be on the Rockies in all likelihood on Monday. So if you want to hop on the overnight, I don't know which way the line moves. I think the line may move against Colorado, so you might want to sit on that one a little bit. I think Carlos Martinez probably takes some money there, but I will be on Colorado in all likelihood on Monday. So a lot of stuff here on today's show. And again, Adam at bangthebook.com if you want to subscribe to the notes. And I promise I will get to those questions from listeners that I haven't had a chance to answer yet as I've been trying to catch up a little bit. So we'll be back on the air with another edition of the Bettors Box on Monday. Adam at bangthebook.com, at Skating Tripods if you've got Monday mailbag questions. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.